Good afternoon, Bay Area. Welcome to the Sights and Sounds Show with Janae Darden, where every week we tap into the Bay Area art scene and bring you rich conversations with artists. On today's show, we're celebrating our one-year anniversary, and we'll hear from co-writers of the hit musical Co-Founders because they have a big show coming up soon in Oakland. Then we'll revisit my interview with Tony Award-winning actor Francis Jew, and we'll look back at some favorite and funny moments from the past year. Today's theme is celebrating good memories and making new ones, and it's our anniversary. All right, that's all coming up. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Sights and Sounds Show with me, Janae Darden, on KALW 91.7 FM. Ooh, I love this song. Today, we're celebrating our one-year anniversary. Our show launched on March 12th of last year. Recently, KALW's executive director, James Cass, asked me what was one of my favorite arts and culture works that I covered in 2025. And without skipping a beat, I said Co-Founders. The original hip-hop musical was sold out during its entire run. Co-Founders is about a young rising tech genius from West Oakland who needs money to save her childhood home. The musical broke ground with its use of technology, and might I add that the soundtrack is so good. You heard a little bit of it in the beginning. Well, the creators of Co-Founders are doing something else groundbreaking. They're going to have a show that's part startup pitch contest and part concert. So picture it, live performances from Co-Founders cast and aspiring tech entrepreneurs competing for $30,000. All right. So the event is Saturday, April 11th at the Henry J. Kaiser Center in Oakland. And I'm so excited to have artists from the creative team behind Co-Founders on my first anniversary show. So joining me are two of the co-writers of Co-Founders, Bo Lewis and Ryan Nicole. Hey!
Hey, what's happening?
Yay, so glad to be here. Happy anniversary.
Thank you. I love this show. And I was telling you guys about how much I love this show. And I tell Ryan every chance I get, I love your show.
I'm so tickled by that. We're really honored by, you know, your appreciation of the show and of 10 years of work that both of us have put in to make this thing a reality. Just really grateful for anybody who resonates with it.
Yes. And shout out to Adisha, too, who's also the other co-writer. What's Adisha's last name?
That's right.
Adisha Adefala.
Adefala.
There you go. Come on, Bo.
Okay, Bo.
She's made me practice it many times.
Okay.
I've gotten it.
That's why I quizzed you just now. But shout out to her. So I just want to reiterate. So Co-Founders is about a young, brilliant coder who wants to make it big in the tech industry and earn enough money to save her childhood home in West Oakland. So themes of gentrification here. Okay, so she hacks into the admissions list of a prestigious accelerator program, and an accelerator program provides mentorship and support to founders launching their startups, and it helps their business grow faster. It was just a great story, great music, Okay, were you too surprised by how successful this musical was? Were you surprised?
I'm gonna say yeah. I mean, you know, you put out your greatest hopes. We were telling people from the year that we got the announcement that we were going to have a world premiere. We were telling people this will sell out, and that was our greatest hope and ambition. And we did everything else to shore it up to make sure that that was a possibility. But the reality is, like, you never know if it's going to resonate with people, you know, the things that you're imagining or dreaming, and it did.
Yeah. What about you, Bo? Did you think?
Yeah, I mean, it's one thing, you know, we've, 13 versions of the show, you know, some of those friends and family. It's one thing when your mom and your sister and your buddy show up and they're like, yeah, that's great. And then all of a sudden you've got a house that's empty, needs full of paying strangers. Like, these people paid money. I don't know who they are. I don't know enough people to fill this house for 6 weeks, 40 shows. And so that was the real test, to be honest. And it was beautiful. It was so beautiful. I got to sit in the house and watch like 30 of those shows. Ryan was on stage. Adisha was on stage. My talents on stage were definitely not good enough for this version of the show, the world premiere. So I got to watch it. And I got to watch it with a bunch of different audiences and hear and feel the magic of people together experiencing live theater and music and acting, which is a rare experience, increasingly rare nowadays. So that was just so beautiful and magical to be a part of.
Oh, yes, wonderful. Can you I don't know where you are. Can you tell the people in the background to shh?
Oh, hush it up.
Yeah. Thank you.
No.
And I said that with love. Hush it up.
Of course, I happen to be at, like, it's the most busy moment of the whole afternoon.
Oh, okay.
In a cafe, and yeah. Now everybody's talking.
Yeah, just tell them. Okay, so this upcoming event, you know, I share what the show is about. So this upcoming event you have actually mirrors the plot of Co-Founders. And the event is called the All People Powered Concert and Pitch Competition. So tell us about the concept and where did the idea come from? Go ahead, Bo.
Yeah. Okay, so we had this crazy idea in the show, which was, what if Asada Thompson, our protagonist, creates her own accelerator to rival the exclusive one, and by the end of the show, she invites first-time founders who had never had the chance for someone to bet on them. These are dreamers. These are people with ideas and insights, builders who have amazing innovations to contribute if given the shot, and she gives them the shot. And so we're like, hey, what if we gave people that shot? Would that be possible? Is that too much to dream? And so we actually piloted this during the show. So people who came to the show, you may remember this, Janae, they could share a startup idea that they had, and we would choose two different ideas every night, and we would write them into the show and have people in the audience's ideas reflected on stage. We're like, hey, everyone's an entrepreneur, everyone could be a founder, everyone can chase this dream. And so that grew, and over the world premiere run, we had 500 different startups submit their ideas to be considered for the show. So that built momentum and this idea towards, what if we made the All People Powered Accelerator actually real and actually gave some money to the community of founders who haven't had this opportunity? And we got really fortunate that Barbara Lee, shout out to Oakland's mayor Barbara Lee, became a super fan of this show. She's been a fan of Ryan. I don't think she knows who I am from anybody, but we've gotten to know each other, and I really appreciate her support for the show. But she said, hey, what if we did this show in Oakland? And we said, what if we brought the All People Powered Accelerator to life for real, for real? And so that's what we're doing, is we've actually opened up to the community and have over 100 first-time founders apply with their startup ideas to the All People Powered Accelerator. That's gotten narrowed down through our selection committee to 10 finalists, then 3 finalists who are all being mentored, and they will all pitch on stage live at this concert April 11th, and they will all receive their first investment of non-dilutive capital as a result of this show.
Wow. So who are some of the, like, people who've pitched? Like, let me backtrack. Like, have the three finalists been chosen?
The three finalists have been chosen. I think, well, we made the announcement live, and so we'll tell you now. There's a founder called, by the name of Kev Choice. People know him as an exquisite musician locally.
Yeah.
But he is also a tech founder of a company called Choice Scores, which innovates the way that music is scored and provides access for people who don't otherwise have opportunities to score music or play their music. Like, so think popular music needs to be written out in music sheets to be played. And that is a long, arduous, and expensive process. So consequently, people who are learning music often have to learn Bach or Beethoven or what have you. Not because there's just a focus on that, but because that music's already scored out. But, you know, what if you get a chance to score out some Drake song or some new Kendrick number or whatever? Choice Scores will allow that to happen, make that possible. Then we have Herbal Oracle, which is a herbal kiosk, AI-powered herbal kiosk that will provide herbal solutions to people seeking solutions to health challenges. And so think the hers and hims of herbs, right? That's Jazz Hudson who's creating that. Most people know her as a poet and an artist, but she is also cutting her teeth as a tech founder. And then we have Finney, which is a financial tech solution for students seeking access and resources to college. So their objective is to make college accessible to everybody. Their goal is to make it so that students can find, scholarships in anywhere to pay for their college. There's an exorbitant number, and I don't want to misquote it, but there are hundreds of millions of dollars of scholarships that go unanswered every year. And there's obviously hundreds of then thousands of students who don't have enough money to pay for college. So they're going to help create a solution, an AI powered solution that efficates that process and makes it accessible for folks. Ooh. So those are our three finalists.
Well, I know I could have used that last one when I was going to college.
Same you know, me, all of us. I'd have a doctorate by now if I had access to that.
If you're just joining me, I'm speaking with Ryan Nicole and Bo Lewis. They're part of the creative team behind last year's hit hip-hop musical Co-Founders. They're bringing the energy of that show to Oakland for a special program called the All People-Powered Concert and Pitch Competition, and it's a live concert and pitch competition for people with startup ideas. They're describing it as Shark Tank meets Soul Beat. They sold me on that. Okay, so the event is on a Saturday, April 11th at the Henry J. Kaiser Center. Tickets are on sale. Okay, so you guys know I love the soundtrack. I've said it. I've said it a million times. I performed for Ryan before this show started, and it was terrible.
She's got bars, y'all. Beautiful.
She's got bars. She's gonna be on stage.
They low bars.
Yep.
They're very low bars.
Still an Olympic sport.
I got karaoke skills, but okay. So who can we expect to perform? Because there's so many good artists on the soundtrack. Will they be there?
Yeah, so we've got a group of folks called the Asadas. So every woman who has played Asada in the recent history, local woman. So we've got Adisha Adefela, who's playing an Asada. We've got B DeVoe, who was understudying as Asada. Yeah. And then we've got Angel Adedekun, who also went on as Asada in the world premiere. So we've got the three of them who will play something of like the Supremes. You'll see how that's set up.
Okay.
We've got Jordan Covington, who's playing Demir, who was playing Demir during the world premiere.
Okay.
You got myself. I'll be playing Kamaya, his sister.
Right. Okay, yeah. I was about to say, because y'all cousins too, Asada, right?
Yeah, exactly, uh-huh. Exactly. But we're really excited. I mean, Bo Lewis will be on stage.
Bo Lewis, you dropping bars. You dropping high bars.
He got high bars. Yeah, you guys should come and check it out. But we've also got Bosco Conte and the Soul Slappers. So Bosco is also a tech entrepreneur and an engineer when he's not creating multi-platinum hits with Dua Lipa and Kanye West.
And shout out to the MD for the NPR Tiny Desk with E40. That was Bosco putting it together.
So Bosco
will be on stage making the music, also celebrating entrepreneurial culture.
Nice.
Yeah. So him and the Soul Slappers will be there. So yeah, they'll be providing the backline music. It's going to be really amazing. It's going to be so much fun.
And we have about 2 minutes. So for people that missed maybe they couldn't get into Co-Founders, they missed it. They'll be hearing songs from the original soundtrack. So they got to get a sample of what they missed. Right.
Oh yeah. And this is actually our first, like family friendly event. Like we should say that this is 2 PM. Right. So this is like, hey, you can't get the babysitter. Like all good. Like bring the kids should come to this. Henry J. Kaiser. If you haven't been, the Calvin Simmons is just a beautiful restored historical theater, and they're reopening and doing some amazing programming. So we're really happy to be there just right on Lake Merritt. It's going to be a wonderful, wonderful afternoon for people who didn't see Co-Founders and like, man, I really wish, where was I? You can come see this show. You'll hear some of the music. And people who did, this is the next evolution. So yeah, we welcome people who are familiar with it, people who aren't familiar with it, people who are looking for something good to do with some music and some good energy on a Saturday afternoon. Come through.
Nice. And it's right by Lake Merritt BART. So if you need to take BART, it's right there. And the Henry J. Kaiser Center is really, really gorgeous. Like I said, I think this musical is fabulous. I'm not saying that because I'm from Oakland and because it's Ryan and because I'm now a fan of Bo and Adisha. I'm not saying that because you guys are all fabulous and because the soundtrack is good. And B. DeVoe's been on our show, who is fabulous.
Yes.
And Fur's going to come on a show soon.
Fur
can sing. P-H-E-R, y'all. Man. Look up Fur.
Man.
Fur can, oh my God. I saw Fur in a real intimate concert. Or I wouldn't call it a concert. It was a real intimate show at Wildflower. And it was like, I can't even just describe how beautiful that show was. But I feel
like... Did he wear his iconic overalls?
Yes, he did. Yes. He did. he tricked me. Because I said, you going to get with these overalls? Blew us away. Okay, we got 30 seconds.
Yes.
When is Co-Founders going to Broadway? Because I'm ready. You got Ryan has on a New York hat, so come on now, come on.
I'm getting ready.
Come up, we got to put that in the universe. Gone.
Yeah, say so it. This is a 10-year journey. This is still the launch pad and still the beginning. This story needs to be told. It is being told in the Bay, and the rest of the world is ready. These different influences around the Bay, so goes the rest of the world. New York is on our path. We will be in New York at the end of this year doing a showcase reading with the industry folks. We've been in New York. We've been in New York at Joe's Pub. Shout out the Public Theater. We've been in New York at the National Alliance of Musical Theaters Festival of New Works in 2020. So we've been going out there as we build from the Bay. The vision is to the Bay to be the platform that launches it to the rest of the world.
Oh, okay. I'm excited for you guys. And you guys, you know, you have my support here. Ryan Nicole and Bo Lewis, thank you so much.
Yes. Thank you, Janae. Appreciate you. Wow, this is great.
Yeah, Ryan Nicole and Bo Lewis are the co-writers, or two of the co-writers, of Co-Founders, and the All People Power Concert and Pitch Competition is on Saturday, April 11th at the Hendrick J. Kaiser Center in Oakland. Get your tickets now. And coming up, a Bay Area actor who made history at the Tony Awards last year. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Sights and Sounds Show with me, Janae Darden, right here on KALW 91.7 FM in the Bay Area. Today, we're celebrating the show's one-year anniversary, and I get to talk to great artists at different stages of their career on this show. Some are just starting. Some have won major awards. Last year, San Francisco actor Francis Ju won a Tony for his performance in the Broadway play Yellow Face. Francis lives in New York now. The last time an Asian actor won Best Performance before Francis was in 1988, and that winner was another San Francisco native, B.D. Wong. Yellow Face is by David Henry Wong and is semi-autobiographical. It's about how David, an Asian American playwright, who back in the 90s spoke out against a white actor playing an Asian character in Miss Saigon, but he later mistakenly cast a white actor to play an Asian character in his own production. Daniel Dae Kim plays David, and Francis Ju played David's funny, self-absorbed, fame-hungry banker father. Here's a clip.
Dad. I thought you'd want to know. I just made a big donation to your friend, Bill Clinton.
He's not my friend.
You supported him, didn't you? I talked to this guy from his campaign, told him I want to start a new group, Chinese Republican Bankers for Clinton.
Would there be any other members?
Lots. Did you hear that? Pat Buchanan wants to kick us all out of the country. The Clinton guy, he loved my idea.
That's great, Dad, but you
know
what?
Now I can finally become ambassador to Great Britain.
What? You know you're one of the least diplomatic people in the world.
I know, isn't it beautiful?
He's so funny. Here's my 2025 interview with Francis Ju after he learned of his Tony nomination. And joining me is Tony Award nominee for Best Featured Actor in a Play. You know, I had to be official with it. Francis Ju. Hey, Francis.
Hey, Janae. It's so wonderful to be here with you.
I'm so glad that you're here. And again, we're all excited here in the studio. Congratulations.
Thank you so much. I am flabbergasted and thrilled because I never expected something like this to happen.
I can imagine what was the feel like when you got the call that you were nominated for a Tony Award?
I couldn't believe it, but I really didn't have time to process it immediately. I had to start talking to reporters and who cover Broadway and try to explain to them how it felt when I had no idea. I was just standing in my living room in my pajamas trying to process, you know?
Yeah, I saw a video of you in your pajamas, like, is this real? Is this real? So has it sunk in yet? Like, does it feel real now?
You know, in 78 years of Tony history, the only Asian actor ever to have been nominated for a Tony for a play on Broadway was B.D. Wong in 1988. Mm-hmm. In 78 years. So this year, there has been just a huge amount of acknowledgement of Asian talent. on Broadway, and I'm so, so grateful. I love that I am nominated alongside Daniel Dae Kim, yes, who is making history for the very first Asian actor to be nominated for best leading role in a play on Broadway.
And that's your co-star. Yes, he's
my co-star, Daniel. Yeah, and that, yes, and then David himself was nominated for best revival. The three of us being nominated together feels like a hat trick.
Well, and I want to dig into that a little bit. But first, this, you know, since you're from the Bay, you're from San Francisco. Now, you were, you know, we gotta play that up. We gotta claim you, Francis. You know, you one of us.
I'm a San Francisco boy, you know, forever.
I know you're in New York, but you still one of ours. So you grew up in the Richmond district?
Yes.
Okay. Okay.
Born and raised in Richmond.
Okay. And so did you know growing up here as a kid that you wanted to be an actor?
Oh, yes. I knew I wanted to be an actor as soon as I saw one of my older brothers play the prince in a high school production of The King and I. Oh. I was a shy kid. I couldn't talk to people, even people in my own family. I was really, really shy. And when I first saw, I mean, it was the very first live musical that I ever went to was that high school production of The King and I. And I can still remember the 18-year-old actress playing Mrs. Anna crying on stage while reading that letter from the king. And I remember myself crying, watching this 18-year-old kid playing the king die at the end of the show. And I thought immediately, this is my tribe. This is where I can learn to talk to people and express myself and figure out, you know, the world in a way that I didn't know how to do on my own.
Mm. Well, you know, and in this play, Yellowface, you teach us so much through this character that you play. You play Mr. Henry Wong, the late Henry Wong, Henry Y. Wong. Mm-hmm. He was the founder of the Far East National Bank, which was the first federally chartered bank in the United States that was founded by an Asian American. And his character is funny. He's a little charming. He's kind of out of touch. He romanticizes America. But sometimes he'll say stuff that I'm like, what? But it kind of makes sense.
Don't we think that about our parents all the time?
Yes, yes.
But, you know, I remember that one of the few things that David told me directly about his father was that, one, he stood tall. He was a proud man. Mm-hmm. And second, he told me that whenever his father walked into a room, he was the star.
Oh, I believe that.
And, you know, David could win a Tony Award. He could be on the shortlist for the Pulitzer multiple times. He can write operas that are, you know, produced all over the world. But whenever he was with his dad was the star. And I, you know, took that as permission, really, to go hog wild with this character. And it reminded me a lot of members of my own family, mm-hmm, in lots of different ways, too.
Was it fun to play him? Because he was so, I mean, and there's times, too, he's very serious. But it's not many times he's very serious. But when he is, you know, you hit it out the park, Francis.
But you also
hit it out the park, too, with just his personality. He's so self-centered.
Well, you know, Henry was so much braver than I am in real life. And at the same time, he had this radical faith in the ideals, mm-hmm, that America says it believes in, like freedom,
right,
like inclusion. And I am not, you know, I'm still that shy little boy. And I you know, I've grown up always having doubts about how far we've come, about whether we do actually live up to those ideals. And Henry's optimism that I think he shares with a lot of other immigrants in this country, I think is a real key to him as a character, his essence, and the reason why David wrote him into this play.
Yeah, yeah. And I definitely felt all of that. And I know, too, it's semi-autobiographical. And so, you know, in the play, we learn, and this is in the news if you read old articles, David's father was caught up in a campaign donation scandal during the 90s, you know, with the whole racial profiling of Chinese Americans. And so he was under Senate investigation for his bank's ties to China. But you have to watch the play to see how, you know, how David explains all of that happened back then. I don't want to give it away. So that's where the seriousness comes in too. Even though he still finds humor because he wants attention, so he wants to be in the papers and he wants attention so bad. Yeah. That's why I was like, go ahead.
He embodied the American dream. I mean, he started off immigrating to America. You know, he wasn't wealthy to begin with, and he, you know, he worked in a laundry when he was younger, mm-hmm. and eventually he forms this bank. Now, can you imagine a bank in the United States that doesn't accept, you know, deposits from China, right. investment from other countries? And yet, you know, during Donorgate, there were investigations of Asian American owned banks, simply because they were Asian American. And none of the charges actually went to trial. None of them, he was never convicted of anything, but his license was revoked. Mm-hmm. And they never granted him a new one, even though he was never found guilty of anything. So this man, who, like so many other immigrants, just embodied this avid belief in what America stands for, eventually, you know, who lived the American dream until it was denied him.
Yeah, that's why I said the play is funny and mm-hmm. it's really deep, too. Now, I understand, Francis, so when, and correct me if I'm wrong, so when Yellowface debuted off Broadway initially in 2007, you weren't cast initially? Or how did that work?
Well, I had done developmental readings for David of the play, but I was not asked to do the play when it first premiered at the Mark Taper Forum in LA.
Ah.
I was younger then, as we all were. And I was told that, you know, I was too young for the part to play David's father, and that David had a really good friend, a wonderful actor who had done a lot of David's early plays in the 70s, that David had that actor in mind for the part. So he played that in LA, but for whatever reason was not attached to the show when it came to New York. So I was invited to do the show in New York. And to his credit, on the very first day of rehearsal, David said to the entire company, "I was wrong. Francis is old enough to play this part." Now, I had my own doubts, but, you know, it's such a great part. I really wanted to play it.
Yeah. And did it feel different? I mean, you're older now. Did it feel different playing him now?
Oh, my God. I think we've all, you know, changed in the last 15, 20 years, haven't we? I mean, look at what we've experienced. We've gone from the highs of Obama in the White House and us feeling like maybe we're on the cusp of actually becoming a post-racial society. Yeah. Maybe we really are a multiracial democracy, and we can prove to the world that it can actually work. And look at where we are now, where immigrants are being targeted, where we're questioning whether even citizens have the right to due process, where so many disenfranchised people are afraid, and there are a lot of people who are afraid of them. And I think that although David started writing this 20 years ago, he was really prescient. I mean, there's so much about this play that is so current now, mm-hmm. 20 years later.
Yeah, you know, and I was thinking about that too when I was watching. I said, wow, some of these issues we're still dealing with today. And it's funny because David Wong, I mean, like, again, it's semi autobiographical, and he pokes fun at himself
in the play.
And I was like, wow, like, which is funny.
He makes more fun of himself than anybody else.
He does. And I was thinking about his father, because his father has such a big ego. So I was just thinking just how different they are anyway. Because I was like, I couldn't see his father doing that. But I was like, if his father wrote a play, he would be like, probably some like, you know, some action hero or something, right? What do you respect about David Wong's work? Because I know you two, you know, you all go way back.
David, his entire career, I think, has helped give me a voice. Not just because I've done so many of his plays, but because his plays exist, I've learned how to articulate what it means to be an American, to be an artist, to be in a family, to be a son, to be a father. Mm-hmm. There are so many things that I just identify with in the way that he writes that are just so specifically David, but also feel akin to how I speak to myself in my soul. Mm-hmm. And he's taught me so much about my own family. Because of his work.
Wow, what a great compliment. What about Daniel Day-Kim, who plays David?
Daniel is an American hero. You know, while Biden was in the White House, he was on a special arts council that met at the White House. You know, and talked and advised the administration on inclusion, on what the arts can do, what how to actually live up to our best ideals. He has always advocated for fair and equitable treatment for people who are not mainstream in this business and in American life. I loved working with him. He worked so incredibly hard. I mean, it's what kind of pressure is there that you're the star of this play on Broadway and that you're portraying the playwright himself who was in the room during rehearsals? And I remember very early in rehearsals, sitting in a chair opposite him, reading a scene and being overcome by this real parental feeling. I'm so proud of him, his integrity, both on stage and in life. I think he's wonderful.
What I was pleasantly surprised to see him is in a comedy, to see his comedic chops, because usually he's in like action, you know, like works and mm-hmm. things like that. So it was good to see him in a different role. I hate when people typecast actors, because I'm like, let people spread their wings and do all different types of genres. So yeah.
Really does in Yellowface as well. I mean, he has such great comic chops, and he goes from, you know, playing this narcissistic writer modeled on David to who is incredibly frustrated with his father and his father's expectations of him to somebody who understands his dad a little bit more. And, you know, there were so many people in the audience who were not Asian, even not connected to the arts, but who said that the relationship between father and son reminded them of their relationship with their parents.
You know, it's something else. You talked about different people in the audience, and we got to wrap up soon. But something else that was interesting that I noticed about the play is that the play is called Yellowface, and the cast is diverse, racially diverse, and you see other non-Asian actors of color playing Asians, which I thought that was interesting, especially because the show is addressing Yellowface, and so I was like, what message is David trying to convey here? Like, I've seen a black woman playing someone Asian, you know, someone that's like Latino. And I thought that was powerful to see that. But I know too, he's given him permission to portray his people. So that was deep too.
Yeah. Brilliant actress, black actress, Miranda Anderson, in the very first, 2 minutes of the play, plays Al Gore.
Right.
And then, you know, towards the end of the play, plays David's, you know, Chinese mother.
Mother, yeah.
Dorothy, you know, brilliant Hispanic actor Kevin De Aguila at the very first moments of the play plays B.D. Wong, you know. So I think that the way that David and Lee Silverman, our wonderful director, designed this particular production was that, you know, this is not binary. It's not just about Asian people and white people. This is about what it means to be American and who gets to decide what that means. Who gets to decide who you are based on what you look like or what race you are or what country you came from? Why don't in America do we get to choose?
Yeah, that's why it's a play. It makes you laugh, but it definitely makes you think. Francis, it has been a pleasure, and I'm so excited for you. So congratulations. And again, thank you.
Thank you so much, Janae.
Yes.
I'm so happy to see you.
Yes, I'm so happy to see you too. We have to do this again, definitely in the near future. Yes, yes.
Would love that. Yes. Anytime.
That was my 2025 interview with Tony Award-winning actor Francis Ju. Watch him in Yellowface on PBS.org or on the PBS app, and you can stream it until March 31st. And shout out to Francis Ju and his family because they listen to the show. Francis, you got to come back on. All right, next up, we look back on some of our favorite moments from the past year. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Sights and Sound Show with me, Janae Darden, on KALW 91.7 FM. Over the past year, I've interviewed more than 150 artists, and I've enjoyed my conversations with every single one, and I hope you enjoyed them as well. We here at the Sights and Sound Show with Janae Darden wanted to play some of our favorite moments. Now, it wasn't easy picking several out of 150 guests, so this is just a snapshot of our list of favorites. Now, this show is so full of wonderful surprises, and I used to watch comedian Sandra Bernhardt on TV as a kid in the 90s, never thinking I might interview her one day. And someone who helped her in the beginning of her career was the late Oakland comedian Paul Mooney. They met when she was 19. Paul Mooney wrote for Dave Chappelle's show and the Richard Pryor show, which Sandra Bernhardt was a cast member of. Here she shares some early memories of Paul Mooney.
And Mooney was, you know, instrumental in, you know, really teaching me how to, like, strip away all the layers. And he'd always, you know, say, Bernhard, they're going to put you through hell in a pair of kerosene drawers. And I was a cigarette come to life. And I was penciled thin. He had Mooneyisms. I always wanted him to write a book, Mooneyisms. But I don't think he ever got around to that. But he was just always, he was just there for me in my first, you know, early years, and like took me to all the clubs, took me to the black clubs, especially where I really learned to cut my teeth. Because if you can win over a black audience, you're really, you know, you're making it big time.
Oh, yeah.
Especially back then, you know, again, things were just more natural. People went out, they saw live performances. So, you know, when I came along, this, you know, kind of funky, groovy white girl, and they dug me, and Mooney endorsed me and then introduced me to Richard Pryor and the Richard Pryor, limited Richard Pryor TV series, which was an incredible experience for all of us young performers who Mooney cast.
That was comedian Sandra Bernhardt. I love when we get a chance to do interviews outside of the studio. And covering the red carpet premiere of the sci-fi film Freaky Tales at the Grand Lake Theater last year was a lot of work and a lot of fun. Okay, so I'm going to be dramatic. I had been on my aching feet for hours doing interviews. It began to drizzle. Then one of the biggest actors in the world rose up, Pedro Pascal. He played a hitman who changed his life in the film. I was standing toward the end of the line of reporters. The publicist said it was getting late and I wouldn't get to interview him. But I yelled, Pedro! And he turned, gave me a smirk, and came over.
Pedro, we're the underdogs. We're on the end.
Oh, yeah? Yeah. You're the very end of the
line.
Yeah,
so we're the so we go with the film. Best.
Yeah. Save the best for last.
That's right, that's right. Yeah.
Pedro Pascal plays a hitman with regrets.
Real quick question. Your character was so conflicted. What did you learn about redemption in playing that character?
Forgiveness. Forgiveness at the end of the day, and that means like forgiving yourself first and then finding your path from there if you want to keep on living, you know.
When asked what he learned about Oakland and its vibe, Pedro responds,
this is the raddest city in California. Its vibe is chill as fuck.
I agree. All right. That was Mr. Fantastic himself, actor Pedro Pascal. We have a lot of tender moments on this show, and someone who brought such a beautiful energy to our studio is artist Kurt Schwartzman. Kurt draws pictures of muni drivers, and he does this because years ago, when he was homeless on a cold night, a muni driver gave him a free ride on the bus so he would be warm. Kurt said that the driver's kind act of really seeing him and humanizing him motivated Kurt to make changes in his life. Here's an example of how Kurt shows his appreciation to muni drivers.
I met this one driver on the One California, and her name was Nicole,
okay.
N-I-K-O-L.
Okay.
She had this big smile, and it turns out she had only been driving for 2 weeks, and it's like, and she was climbing those hills and going down those really steep, not inclines, but declines.
Yeah.
And at the end of the line, I put my drawing in a frame and I handed it to her and I said, "Thank you for your service. You matter. You are appreciated." And the energy that's created from just a random act of kindness,
yes,
it's electric. It's like, to me, it's like pure white light love.
Yeah.
Yeah.
After I interviewed Kurt, he took a photo of me in the studio. And then a few weeks later, he surprised me with a picture that he drew of me behind the mic. And I was so touched. It's one of my favorite gifts, and I look at it every day on my wall. So thank you, Kurt. We have so many great musicians on this show, and one of them is Petaluma folk music artist Ismay. She produced a documentary called Finding Lucinda, where she traveled to parts of the Deep South researching Lucinda Williams and getting inspired by her work. We talked about what she learned about the iconic singer.
She had this history of her dad being a poet and being friends with some of the most incredible writers. And that really informed her work. And I was talking to somebody, and they were saying how, oh, well, you know, Lucinda Williams is just a poet set to music. And in a way, that's kind of accurate. I didn't understand that when I started out, though.
Yeah, definitely her work is poetic. But I feel like that about a lot of musicians. And you have a beautiful voice, and you're definitely great at playing the guitar. So, too, when people watch the film, there's so much music coming from you.
I stepped outside my door, worried about the lightning today. Walked down to the barn, and I stacked up my arms full of hay, as I do in the evening time. I saw the four, some were wild, some were tame.
Shout out to singer Ismay. Another fabulous music artist we had on the show is someone I've had my ears on since they graduated high school, and that's Oakland singer B. DeVoe. They released their first full album, Chrysalis, in 2025, and here's their song, Safe Place.
Walking on this road so long, you seem to be singing the same old song. You need to breathe. You are me.
Place. When I heard it, it speaks to me. It spoke to like our hope and dreams for ourselves. A lot of us are tired. Mm-hmm. It's a whole lot going on, and just with all that, life will still be life. And
mm-hmm.
It speaks to us, so like our tired souls, our exhaustion.
Mm-hmm.
So what inspired that song? That's what I took from it.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Thank you for sharing. My mom actually told me to write a letter to my 24-year-old self and just like tell my, you know, just think about the things that maybe my younger self might need to hear. And me being the Leo that I am, I said, okay, I'll do that, but I'm going to also do what I want to do, which is write a song. And I found these words that were just like speaking to this younger version of me, like the inner little me that needed to hear, you know, basically like, you can be everything that you need for yourself. And I feel like we often, as human beings, just in this experience, in this society, we're often trying to reach outward, you know, and find something that's outside of ourselves. And I really feel like, well, everything that we need is inside ourselves.
B. DeVoe's music is just so beautiful. Okay, one time it got a little steamy at the radio station here. San Francisco poet Kevin Dublin got everybody in the studio warmed up for Valentine's Day when he read this piece.
Dating you would be a full-time job with little security and substandard benefits. Ooh. Yet sometimes we end up in situations that involve usually lasting the quiet blue hour before dew catches light. You chatter cheeky promises post-coitus to piss me off, like you'll always come first to keep me awake. So I admire your back smooth like taupe face of a child dozing with an open mouth against window pane. You sleep rhyme words that don't rhyme, voice twists come inside to sound like trust me. Infatuation lets you believe there's just waiting. Like the dark of sleep, what we need will happen, only heavier. Dreams teach carousels are the best place for open mouth release. Zebra smiles full of teeth lit by glowworm moon. But tonight, instead of reading about black murder, I get in a hot tub to settle into the newlywed phase. Your eyes open, closing, closed, whole lunar cycle at once before our kisses. Birch branches in the wind, celestial upon earth, leaves leaving to become heap of shadow at night. Mosquito tangles between my beard and bites itself to death. Splash of Cabernet from chin, stains blanket under snow moon. Highway whoosh and crickets make mellow between promises, glistening as a stone in the distance. I could die tonight. And it wouldn't matter whether I'd been murdered by some function of the American system. A different kind of ecstasy. Wasp landing on the neck, but showing mercy. Love like a Zen Buddhist student running to his master to tell him about a crow's call heard from a boat. Your lips, my lips, your thighs, my hand, the simple agony of being unable to reach your soul.
Thank you, Kevin Dublin. Ooh, I'm a fan of myself. All right. We're going to cool down with some laughter. Rain Wilson from The Office had me cracking up. Take a listen. So Rain,
you heard it here on Kyle FM. Kyle FM. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Kyle. Feel free to use that audio clip.
I will. Thank
this is Rain Wilson on behalf of Kyle FM.
Okay.
All right. I'm done.
We're all cracking up in the studio. Oh, Rain. I knew you were going to do this. Okay. And I love it. Okay.
Did I throw you off? No. I threw you off your game.
Oh, no, you didn't. Oh, no. I wanted you to bring the rain. I said, bring the rain. I think Rain gave us a little Dwight in that clip, which brings me to another character I got to interview, the Tiny Chef. Now, interviewing an animated character was a dream of mine, and he is so small and green and round and cute. Check out this clip. I am so excited to announce that Tiny Chef was actually able to make some time for us to talk, and so he just jumped on the call. So I'm going to bring him in. He's so gracious because he's actually filming his cooking show right now, but he took a little break to talk to us. So I just want to welcome Tiny Chef. Hey, Chef.
Hello. It's me. It's Tiny Chef. Mr. Bridges on.
Yes.
Can everybody hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Thanks for having me, everybody.
Yes. Welcome, Tiny Chef. I'm so happy that you're here. I wanted to talk to you briefly. Like I said, I don't want to keep you from your show. What are you cooking today on your show, actually?
Well, today, I'm cooking falafel. Oh, it's delicious, too. And it smells so good when it's cooking. Oh, I can't wait to try it.
Oh, I love falafel too, Chef. Oh, that sounds so good. And I know, Chef, I know you know how to throw down in the kitchen because I watch the show. So I know.
Ooh. Sure do.
Oh, yeah, I know you do. Tiny Chef is so adorable. But our final clip is about someone who is causing trouble on the show. David Roach is the co-founder of the Oakland International Film Festival. On average, our interviews on this show run about 15 minutes each. And we tell this to all of the guests ahead of time. But for some reason, David Roach didn't get the message. We only have two minutes, David.
Okay. But wow, 2 minutes.
I know it goes back.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, it goes by real quick. I want to mention a couple other films, just so.
Well, can I get on with you tomorrow or something like that, Janae?
I only have the show on Wednesday. So. Huh?
I know Damien. What about Damien? I saw him pop in a couple times.
You're not pitching the other people's shows, David.
See, there he goes. There he is. I know that brother. See. But go ahead. I'm sorry. Two minutes. I'm so sorry.
David's on Zoom pitching his film.
I'm just saying. I saw him early. He popped in.
Now we got less than a minute.
Go ahead.
Okay, I'm listening. So let's go. I still laugh about David Roach doing that to this day. All the years I've been in radio, that has never happened. The audacity of him to pitch his event to another show during my interview. Shout out to David Roach. All of these interviews are on KLW.org Sights and Sounds page, and you can visit the website to catch up on episodes you missed or want to revisit. All right, that's all the time we have for the Sights and Sounds show with Janae Darden. A million thank yous to our show producer, Porfirio Rangel, for all that you do and all that you've done. Big thanks to our board operator, Damian Miner, for being our radio Yoda. Much gratitude to the KLW engineers who have helped us in a pinch, Devin Strolovich, Gunnity Joe Johnson, and James Rowlands. Big thanks to our director of audio programming, David Boyer, our KLW's executive producer, Ben Trefney, and of course, our executive director, James Cass. Shout out to the Cross Currents team for your support, our social media team, thank you, our live events team. Shout out to our announcer Tarek Ansari, who helped me when I had some live radio jitters. Thanks to our ops manager Mario Butzner. Shout out to Jerry Thompson at Books Inc. because we've done so many live events there. Thank you to all of the guests who have come through. Much love to my family, friends, and mentors for their support. I could not have done this without you. And thank you to the listeners for tuning in and for your kindness whenever I meet you in person. And if I left out anyone, charge it to my head and not my heart. May this be 1 year of many for the Sights and Sounds show with Janae Darden. We'll have another great show for you right here next Wednesday, 4 p.m. Until then, be good to yourselves and each other.